Thank you, Ms. Abu-Suleiman. On each person's table is a little pad like this, and they're pencils for you as well, or pens on which to write your questions. I have several that were presented to me before. I'll read these all to you so that you can begin to think of the response, and then I'll come back to them there. These are quite interesting here. How many proposals do you receive in the course of a given year? And what do you base your decisions on for the ones that you decide to fund? To what extent, if any, is there collaboration between your foundation and others such as Bill Gates and many others that are philanthropic as well? How can one prevent, quote, donor fatigue, quote, and increase giving when the needs of the world seem so overwhelming and the restrictions that you alluded to in terms of people's fears of getting on a list if they transfer out of their country, say to the United States, and the last name of the donor is spelled similarly to that of someone that the law enforcement authorities are looking for, and anybody passing through an airport with a name similar is detained from 4 to 6 hours. I mean, all of us in this room have heard more stories than we probably can count or countenance of that for the last 7 years. Another one is, after Katrina, very few Americans are aware that of the top three donors to the victims, the homeless, the devastated and the destitute, produced by the hurricane and its aftermath. The top three were all Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, four really, and the United Arab Emirates. How can one circulate this kind of message? Another one is, what lessons have been learned, if any, that are applicable from the fact that after 9/11, within days, His Royal Highness Prince Waleed bin Talal bin Abdulaziz Al Saud presented a check to Mayor Rudy Giuliani of New York for the victims, families, and the survivors. And he added a phrase or two that focused on some of the why dimensions of 9/11 that seemed to be taboo, even to the 9/11 Commission to address, in terms of making reference to the prolongation of the Israeli-Palestinian problem. And either the mayor himself or pressures upon him by his advisors said, give that check back. We will not accept such a check. Had it been offered by someone other than an Arab and a Muslim, might it have been accepted? And how can one better publicize that for 30 years now, almost annually, the top three of the most generous countries in the world in terms of a percentage of their GDP, as well as a percentage of the per capita income of their citizens, have been Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates? And while the United States is the number one aid giver in terms of the aggregate, in terms of charity per capita internationally, the U.S. is 17th. And the first three spots are Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates, year after year after year after year. These are questions, and if you want me to read them again, I can. But you can choose which ones you may like to answer.
I can answer all of them, actually.
Okay.
Okay. How many number of proposals we get? Thousands, yes. And that does lead to donor fatigue. Sometimes it gets overwhelming because you get so many great requests. I mean, we get the funny requests. I was just telling a friend yesterday that we got a proposal for, I think, 10 universities to build peace universities for $3 billion that he wanted the Al-Waleed to fund all of it. And I'm like, yes, 10% of Al-Waleed's money for somebody else's university. I don't think so. But it seems obvious to me that we wouldn't fund the whole university, but it didn't seem so obvious to the proposal maker. So the way that we do our funding or grant making is that we have four areas that we work with. We work with Islam West Dialogue, which is one of the biggest areas departments in the foundation, and that's to help bridge between Islam and the West through academic institutions, is to bring objective, intellectual, academic work to the arena, to bring common sense and logic to the discussion, as we've seen these two were lacking in the past 8 years. We also fund a lot of initiatives like this conference and the organization, the National Council for U.S. Arab Relations. We fund the rabbis and imam conferences, some leadership initiatives between Muslims and Western leaders so that they can come to the table. Some of it is publicized, not publicized. We also do a lot of rapid aid, which means if there was a disaster in the world, we already have international partners, such as the United Nations or OCHA or other organizations that have also local groups, and we go in and we help out. We did not actually donate to Katrina, one, because Saudi Arabia donated such a large amount of money. The other one is that out of the idea that the U.S. should be able to take care of itself, there was a huge problem. There's a reason why Katrina happened, and we thought if there was too much aid pouring in, one, that will make the U.S. laughingstock when, you know, people are also donating to the U.S., but it also will help mask some of the problems of why Katrina occurred and why it was not fixed so quickly. So Katrina was an exception, but we usually go in very quickly to any place that is there is a problem in, a natural disaster. Then we have women development in the Arab world and Saudi Arabia, where we work on developing women with the understanding that there's a cultural and religious context. It doesn't always have to be Islamic, because we also have large Christian minorities and some Jewish minorities in some of those countries. And how do you work with all these variables to make sure that the development of women occurs as women need it and want it, rather than to impose it on them or impose models that we think work? So that's another thing. The fourth area is that poverty alleviation, and we do a lot of work in Africa, and we do some work in Saudi Arabia because we also have a poverty problem in Saudi Arabia. In decision-making, it's very important that you actually know what your mission is, because your mission, if it's well-crafted, if it's well-done, means that it actually influences every single decision on a proposal that you make. It helps you to avoid something called mission creep, which means you start diluting the effect of your giving. It also depends on how much you're giving. If you're a donor who gives about $10,000 a year, or somebody who gives $10 million a year, what is it that you really believe in? What is it that you really want to see? And you work towards that. You have to be ruthless. You know, sometimes there's going to be this great person who's going to this great university, but they don't have the money from Bangladesh, and they got into Harvard, and they need like $50,000 a year or $70,000 a year. And you know that this person is going to be great, but you're going to say no, because you can't let your heart always lead you. Otherwise, the work that you're supposed to be doing will be diluted. We do keep something called ash cash. The prince is wealthy enough that we can actually have a little bit of mission creep. Most people can't afford this, but we can. Ash cash is a medical term of money that doctors get when somebody dies. Okay, so, but they never know how much money they have, but they keep it on the side. And this Ashcash that we have is for sometimes things that are not really within our core mission, which we're very ruthless about, but we know nobody else is going to help out. We know no other foundation is going to help out. And therefore, we'll give the money thinking of it, and we'll tell them, we don't give money. This is just something from outside so that they know not to ask the next year. Donor fatigue is really a big problem, not in just in our foundation, but everywhere we go, because so many people ask you and keep on asking you, and that's why, again, you have to have your mission so that you can tell them, I'm sorry, this is not in my core area of interest, this is not a focus of this foundation, and you know, you're very professional about it. What we do is we also help them network. We'll say, but we know this foundation does this, or these people actually can help you, and we have a database that we allow people to use. Restrictions. I'm sorry, can you just, what is the question about restrictions? Oh yeah, the restrictions about giving money. I think this is one of the biggest problems that's facing the world right now. How do you give money without fear? Especially if you have a weird sounding last name again. And if you might want to visit anywhere outside of your own home country, you don't want to be arrested by Interpol or something. I think here, this is where institutions need to come together. So we need to have lawyers and we need to have government officials from all over the world actually setting up regulations, but working together, not one place imposing regulations on the rest of the world, working together. And I think we can err on the positive rather than the negative. For example, some money might be given to people that are not so good, but that means billions of dollars are being given to the right organizations. We can't stop most people giving just because we're afraid of a few thousand dollars here and there. So the mechanism where there's lawyers, there's institutions, governments coming together to work on the regulations. Also, I think people need to fund those great organizations that actually fight for people who are put in these positions, sort of like the lawyers for the Constitution, the people who work for pro bono on these issues. Not many people actually fund organizations that work with the legislation, so this is something else that needs to be funded. Arabic giving, yes, as I said, Arabic giving stemmed from, I think, a real need a long time ago in where we come from. And the idea of giving, a lot of people don't even advertise what they give, is so inherent within the Arabic personality. I'm not surprised to know that Saudi Arabia is one of the major givers to the world. I live in Saudi Arabia. I hear about it. But I know a lot of people are, because they think that we are insulated and we actually only give to madrasas or we give to our own. So I'm happy that this information gets out a little bit more and more. But stereotypes are very hard to overcome. Al-Waleed gave $10 million to New York City and asked some very hard questions. It's a very delicate situation. I think timing, it was right after 9/11. A lot of people were still afraid. There was this fear of this happening again. It was a major culture shock. It was a major humanitarian shock for Americans. It wasn't as big to the Arab world, and I know the American people get upset about this, but we have 3,000 people dying every day somewhere. You know, we're used to it. So I guess the questioning came from the Al-Waleed about what are the core reasons this happened, and let's discuss core issues. Let's work on making sure this doesn't happen again. And people were not willing to listen to it. And it was used against him. And now 8 years later, this is exactly where we're at. We're actually now starting to ask the questions. The press is not afraid to ask questions. Arabs are not afraid to ask questions. Americans are not afraid to ask questions. And I think, I wish people listened 8 years ago. Perhaps, you know, we wouldn't have gone through what we're going through. But again, timing is sometimes important.
Wow. We have gone through all of our questions there. Please join me in thanking Mona Abu Suleiman.